Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Okay, you know, we're coming full cycle. If you were with us last week, you were reintroduced to a social scientist with the council, Chris Hawkins. And we talked about some things, which is your participation into the information gathering that the council does for fishing. And in that, the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is this huge, has this huge area, but it's in federal water. So a lot of you that are shore casters and reef guys, you don't kind of relate to some of the things we do, but it does cross over, and there's a tremendous amount of interplay between the state, the DLNR, and the Coast Guard, and the council, and everybody else, and it's all to take care of what we're doing. Today, Chris is back as a social scientist, but with a little slightly different hat on, because some of the things that the council is charged to do, I think, Chris, would be really interesting to people that are listening, because I don't think they have a real idea of just how much work goes on there and to what end.
Yeah, I forgot how many pages the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation Management Act is.
It's a big one. Yeah.
But, if folks thumb through that, they would really see the responsibility of the councils in terms of developing policy and in recommending policy to the federal government. And to that end, there's just a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of information. I mean, fisheries management is a data-hungry beast. And so
that's a great way to put it.
It really is. And so the councils really have this, and they've grown over the years. It used to be, 30, 40 years ago when the councils were first established, that, it's sort of a generalization here, but the council staff, such as it was here and elsewhere at the other eight councils, they pretty much just got the coffee for the council members and for the other meeting attendants. Now they are really every council has a very professional, well-trained staff who do conduct the analysis and work with the federal government scientists on all of this. Very much their equals in every way, or better.
But I'm guessing that sometimes looking at the list of things that need to be done, it's hard to think, why are they doing that? I mean, why is that important to the mix? From what I understand, the decision makers, particularly at the federal level, they have to really cover their decisions with science. And so maybe you can explain what some of these things are and maybe why it's even important to participate in them.
Yeah, so the councils in the Magnuson Act, the councils in the federal government have to comply with what are known as the 10 national standards. And National Standard 2 is the best scientific information available standard. And where the fishery service gets sued on the decisions it makes on fishery management issues often largely has to do with those best available science issues. The folks who bring the lawsuits can point to it and say, well, you didn't use the best available science in this regard. And that's both on the social side and the biological side. More often, I think, on the biological side. I think they haven't, hasn't been as much of a focus on the social and the economic side. Some places it has. But really, the science is important.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the social side is more anecdotal and it's not as maybe quite as documented. But I do know that when take something like a stock assessment, which we've talked about in other places, a stock assessment's only as good as the person making the assessment and the methods that they use. And now, from what I understand, the methods besides visual sight and predictability are pretty accurate based on performance. But I still don't think that the listener today knows just how much you guys have to produce as part of your jobs. What is expected of you?
And not only how much we have to produce in terms of the information that we have to generate. I mean, each of what we call the fishery management plan amendment. So if there's a change that's required in the fishery for some reason, we have to amend the fishery management plan. And those documents run 130, 150 pages sometimes, and they have a number of requirements.
That's not cut and paste either. That's new stuff.
A lot of it is new stuff. All the analytical sections are all new information, new items anyway. And so there's a checklist that we have to comply with in the Magnuson Act that says all of the things that have to go into it. And it's a long checklist. And to do it all right requires a lot of time. And you know, just to remind people that we have three council meetings a year, and so you're often trying to get a lot of this done in between those council meetings.
Sure.
So at the next council meeting, we can present to the council.
We didn't do anything this time.
It's a long process, and we'll get back to you in a year or two. That doesn't cut it. So we're running our tails off trying to get the information as good as we can for the next council meeting so we can keep the ball going.
Let's give maybe an example of what some of these things might be. Like, say specifically, maybe something that you think that people have no idea why that's included in the mix. Some oddball thing or some mainstream. First of all, a mainstream. When you're talking about this, a mandated report, what would some of them be?
A mandated report?
Yeah.
I'll just give you I'll give you an example of what's going on sort of right now, or just an issue that just concluded that's sort of a mainstream issue and that's really is data driven. You know, the council just had to make a tough decision on an issue in American Samoa where the larger long line vessels have been pushed offshore, kind of like they have here in Hawaii. They've been separated from the smaller long line vessels so that we can have a healthy vessel class size fisheries, and there's just really not a lot or really any small long line vessels anymore in American Samoa, and so the need to keep them separated, those two groups separated, has largely disappeared. And so in terms of information, you know, the council just can't make that separation go away. It's a regulation, it's a law on the books.
It's a law.
The information that the council needed to make its decision was economic in nature. What's going on with the larger long line vessel fleets over the years? Why is there a need to try to allow them to fish in areas that they have been prohibited from fishing? It was social in nature. What are the attitudes, values, and perspectives of both sides? It was biological in nature. What is the condition, so to speak, of the stock? Where are the fish? Where are they likely to be? And so it took, you know, a couple of years, really, at the end of the day, to get all of that information in. And that was, you know, week after week after week, month after month, bringing it in, having meetings, having phone calls, working with the Science Center to bring the information in.
How much of a relief is it to get one of those things done? You know, and I know that, for instance, they're never done because they're going to get, you know, they're only as good as they are today. But I think that all of the things that are being done nowadays, the ability to update them, change them, and edit them and correct them are better than, you know, than we were shooting in the dark a few years ago in some of these things.
Yeah, I mean, it is really the definition of adaptive management. Mm-hmm. You're adapting the management regime to the new conditions in the fishery and in the fishing community. And it is, I personally think it is a relief to get them done because, you got a lot of things and we can move on to the next thing and we can pay more attention to the other things on the plate. And so, there's also a fatigue that creeps in. And when you're dealing with an issue for a couple of years, and especially if it's contentious and socially divisive, it is good to have some finality for everybody involved, not just the council staff, but the people who the uncertainty exists in their lives about how the fishery is going to be managed in the future.
You know, I've got one concern, and that is the stark reality of the look that we all have to take at our fishery and fisheries all around the world. There is no question that certain of our species a lot of our food fish is being really challenged. Sustainability, in other words, to keep being able to take the same amount out. You mentioned earlier how many pages the Magnuson-Stevenson Act is. I mean, that thing is like, it's huge.
It's big.
And just to get people to agree on that, I mean, if you open that document again today, there'd be a lot of changes. And there are a lot of changes.
Yep.
You know, and based on the changing, mostly, I think, the stocks of fish.
Yeah, and there's Congress is looking at it again right now. It was last revised in 2006, 2007.
Right.
So, you know, we're several years on now, and
decades,
things have changed.
You know, we
had catch shares in certain fisheries in parts of the country and other management issues. We've kind of come to appreciate the some of the scientific issues that we have a little bit better. In other parts of the country, they're looking at forage fish issues and predator-prey relationships in more light. And so it is a constant process of revising and updating that act.
We could do a whole program on just taking a look at that. But I think the more important that almost everybody's heard of that. Magnuson-Stevenson, it gets quoted all the time. I think a lot of people talk about it even when it has nothing to do with the subject at hand, only because it is a piece of work that took a long time and an awful lot of stakeholders to agree.
I'll tell you, if you go back in the history of the Magnuson Act, it is a seminal law, and there really is not much like it in the rest of the world. It is a bit of a model piece of legislation mm-hmm. on how to manage your resources, and it really came about in the mid 1970s. As a response to massive foreign fleets fishing along our coast, especially yeah. in Alaska and the West Coast. You had a lot of the Russian trawlers and other fishermen. They were allowed yeah. to, I mean, you could spit and hit those boats.
I was going to say, and there was a huge outcry yeah. from the commercial fishing industry in America saying, what are you, government, what are you going to do about these? Yeah. You're taking all our fish.
There was yeah. no yeah. Federal legal mechanism mm-hmm. to, so to speak, boot those foreign fleets yeah. out. And so really the Magnuson Act, as it was known at the time, the Fishery Conservation Management Act, it didn't become the Magnuson Act in right. 1980. At the time, it was really meant to facilitate the domestic fishery, it's got a lot of more ecosystem management principles built into it these days, but back in the day it was really to promote domestic fisheries
yep.
to kick the foreign fleets out and to, you know, for economic and social reasons mm. to increase our domestic fishing capacity. And that's changed over the years. Yep. That's just a process, like you said, that the law has changed subsequently with every year that goes by. There's a sort of a new, we have new values and new ethics in the country, and we've moved to an era where the law is a bit different than it was when it first was introduced.
You know, most people are optimistic. I mean, I'm talking about consumers, and they're thinking, well, yeah, they're going to find fish somewhere. Don't worry, I always have my tuna fish. There was a huge them and us back in the day about aquaculture, about fish farming, and what is it going to take away from the fishery? It may be one of the only things that's going to put fish on people's tables later on. But I think that people want to, they want to have more than a modicum of confidence in who's gathering the information and what the information is being used for. So consequently, knowing what you guys are responsible to produce is important for people that are going to come in and share themselves. Like you talked about sharing their manao before. They got to know that what they give is accurate. I mean, it's going to be taken accurately and then acted on.
Yeah. And that's a big part of the reason that I and several of the other councils, social scientists, have a job, is to do that in a way that people can trust the method and approach, and people can trust the results coming out, or at least we're very transparent in what we don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been a problem.
Let me ask you, just to share with people, the interaction you have with people wearing the same hat otherwise for you. In other words, some of the social scientists from some of the other groups, you guys must have some tales to talk about.
Yeah, you know, we do. And I think it makes it more interesting because not all social scientists are alike. Some of my colleagues are more qualitatively trained, and they approach it from more of an anthropological perspective, where they're trying to understand certain things that are going on in fishing families in mm-hmm. small parts of fishing communities. I'm a bit more of a quantitative train, so I'm looking at representativeness. I'm looking at numbers. I'm looking at mm-hmm. How generalizable are these data back to the larger community that I'm trying to understand. And so I think that adds to the diversity and the richness of the social science expertise and experience, and to the stories that we do share, because they have some very interesting things that they've done in very rural communities in Alaska.
I was going to
say,
you know, when you talk about Alaska, and then you talk about what you said here, that here in Hawaii we tend to think we're eight islands, but in actual fact, this council, you're representing people that have been doing things for 10 generations, for thousands of years. And they hate being interrupted.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the way it works here. Go away. You know, we don't need your help. But in fact, we've been able to get this, I don't want to say camaraderie, but certain levels of understanding. So one would think that you guys all get together at the different councils and say, wow, we're pretty much the same. We may be thousands of miles apart, but we have the same issues.
A lot of the same challenges. Yeah. I think we're especially like the Caribbean Fishery Management Council,
is that right?
Island Council, and some of the data issues. But, you know, I always have to remember that there is a balance that the council needs to try to strike, and we need to have people understand that we are, you know, four or five separate island groups. Mm-hmm. We are one sometimes, and we are one country, and trying to manage fisheries for the benefit of the nation, but also for the benefit of the local people in American Samoa and Guam and CNMI and here in Hawaii, there's a real challenge to getting that balance right, because we do have to recognize it's a federal law, it's federal waters, it's federal, they're federal fisheries, and we have the rest of the country to think about. But they are local livelihoods, local subsistence and sustenance issues, and as you said, 10 generations or more, thousands of years of history and experience of exploitation and use in value and reliance.
Isn't it kind of interesting, though, when we take a look at the last meeting, the 162nd meeting, these folks that come from those other places, they really get impacted when a decision is being made. And one of them was when we start to decide that an area is going to be a protected area. And when they say, well, wait a minute, we're in that area. We don't kind of want your protection. We want to be able to catch fish. So there have been a lot of concessions made by a lot of those people. I think it's a good example for us here in the populated Main Islands to understand when they agree to something, it's a lot more impactful on their, not just their social life, but on their economy than it is maybe for some of us. We can go down the store and buy stuff in a can. They can't.
Right. Yeah. You know, and it's good for us to remember that for all of the talk that the traditional resource management systems in Samoa and Hawaii and elsewhere included these kapu areas, these areas that were closed. They were those were chosen in a social process in many times, and there was a lot of buy-in from the community. You know, decisions are made in American Samoa, for example. They'll go all night talking around the Fale until everybody can live with the decision that's made.
Yeah, that's a wonderful process.
A lot of the decisions are imposed from above. And so when we're talking about marine protected areas and other things, there's a lot. I mean, we could spend several shows talking about all of the biological and the social and the political and the economic issues and implications of those things. But there, we have to keep in mind that the decision to close an area has to have public support and buy-in, and I think it has to be from the bottom up. And if you come in from it with a top down and say, we're going to draw lines on this chart and we're going to close this area and we're not going to consider or consult with you,
good luck. Good luck with that, really. So the bottom line here is when you take a look at some of these jobs, as tedious as some of them may be and repetitious as some of them may be, you know that they're all part of the stew. I mean, you start mixing this stuff up, every single little project, you know, sort of dovetails in with the other one, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah. And I do remember that in the days that get somewhat tedious because, you know, that we've been dealing with the same set of issues for a couple of years and trying to get them through the pipeline. Or, you know, we've got three meetings a year. Hey, some of the other councils have five or six meetings a year. I got to remember that, too. Yeah. But that it is all part of this larger fabric, and it is people's lives, and it is a job like no other, and it's very, very interesting and very challenging. Yeah. And you know, to the extent that, again, that you've said that we need that data and that information to make these decisions, and that's why the council has, you know, what your listeners might not know, part of the Magnuson Act, the council are required, all the councils by the act, to develop these multi-year research priorities that we as a council feel that we need the information that we need to manage the resources.
Well, I hope that next time somebody asks, that you ask somebody for some help or some info, it's forthcoming.
Yeah, no, me too.
Because it can make things a lot easier. Chris, thanks very much for joining us once again. Nice seeing you. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of Go Fish. Thank you very much for being a part of it. Remember, if you don't hear us on Saturday afternoon at 4, you can hear us at Sunday morning at 7. And no matter where you are in Hawaii, Nay, if you want to hear something on the program or you want to challenge something or comment or maybe have another opinion, drop me a line, themikebuckshow@aol.com, themikebuckshow@aol.com. And if you want to know more about what's going on at the council, hey, go to wpcouncil.org. It's really cool. They got lots of stuff going on. Lots you can learn about the fishery and about fishing. So on behalf of the council and POP Fishing and Marine, Nico's Life Raft and Marine Safety, and me, Mike Buck, your captain, thanks for listening. See you next time. Aloha.